Hi, this is Paul, and I have a conversation that I've planned now with John Van Donk. John Van Donk has been working pretty hard on developing the estuary concept. He's been leading three different estuary leader groups, and they have developed what I called, without John's permission, the estuary protocol. And John kind of pushed back on that. But we wanted to have a conversation today and talk about some of the work that John has done and how this is developing and what we think is important. And in fact, John created a document that we're pretty much going to walk through, and we're going to have this document on Google Docs. So if you want a written record of what we talked about today, it's available and you can just download it. I'll put a link to it in the notes. And John, thanks for doing this today.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Paul.
All right, now I got to figure out again how to share the correct screen. There we are. Can you see the document okay, John?
Yeah, just fine.
Okay, good. Yeah. You'd think all this time I spend on Zoom, I'd have a better understanding of the mechanics. So, John, how did we get here? And at least your story of it.
Well, I mean, you are a huge part of it because you, after all, are the one who went ahead and began commenting on Jordan Peterson online and created kind of a following of people that wanted to be engaged in some kind of conversation. And initially, that was merely in the comment section of your channel. But then after that, pretty soon it became the Discord channel where Bridges of Meaning took on a life of its own and very much designed specifically to be a chat place, meaning a conversation space. And then your new adventure in having conversations with random people, the randos. I don't know if that's very new anymore. That's been going on for a few years too already. But I mean that kind of underscores in my mind the great need that exists out there, that as soon as you put slots on the calendar, they're gone. Boom. And so there is a real eagerness on the part of people to talk about their lives, their journey, their spiritual experience, their disappointments, their frustrations, in some cases their successes. And so for people to have some touchstones of places where they can kind of compare notes with somebody who actually is willing to listen and pay attention to what the story entails. And so I think that you have demonstrated conclusively and with great skill that those conversations are important, need to happen, and are happening. So then, of course, a while ago, we talked about, hey, you know, how much of that can actually happen on the ground? Is it only going to be online with your following, or is it also going to be possible to create groups of people that engage with one another in specific locations where they you know, gather people in a room and have those kinds of conversations in real life? And so that's when we talked about, you know, recruiting the estuary leaders. And that's been going on for a year now, and the estuary leaders are getting restless. They're
No.
saying, okay, yeah, well, several of them have already gotten started. You know, I mean, there are estuary groups in Olympia and in Ottawa and in Germany that are off the ground, and then some other fledgling efforts and then in Grand Rapids in Hudsonville. So there are different groups of people that have been part of the leadership network that basically moved ahead and went ahead and got something going, and they're using a little bit of the protocol that we'll be talking about today.
Okay. Well, who shows up for these meetings generally?
Well, if I go by my own, well, there's actually significant overlap, I think, between who shows up on your channel and who shows up on the Discord server and who shows up for the conversations and who shows up for the real live events. Because I've had my own Jordan Peterson meetup group for several years now, and I would say that there is a kind of a pattern there, and I think it's probably the same as the pattern that you encounter in your sphere. But it's church people with bigger questions than the average church is prepared to answer or willing to talk about. You know, I mean, there are some questions. We had a ministry fair and we invited some people from the church to contemplate, you know, joining an estuary. And it would include such questions as, if it turns out that there really is no archaeological evidence that Moses ever existed, what difference does it make for my faith? You know, I mean, there's an if clause there. We don't know if that's actually true, but that's the word on the street that, oh, maybe Moses never existed, you know? So, and then other parts about the origin of the Bible. I mean, the fact that Jordan Peterson was able to attract such an enormous audience talking about the Bible from a non-Christian perspective, he himself doesn't even admit to being a Christian, but he has some tremendous depth of insight from a psychological point of view in the creation story. For example, the whole thing between Cain and Abel and the snake and all these metaphors and symbols that he sees as archetypes. And those are the kind of things that once people engage with that, they would like to talk about that with somebody. Not every church is ready and willing to do that because it often raises more questions than it provides answers. So, you know, and not every pastor is willing to do long form videos like you are to kind of help sort that out. And then the second group would be the nuns and duns who, you know, they're what's your religion? None. And what is your relationship to the church? I'm done with the church, who nevertheless have a need for community. I mean, you know that group of people as well. And then there is all kinds of people who are part of the Jordan Peterson millennial effort to sort themselves out, and the buckos who are, you know, trying to take some new responsibility for their lives, who want to move out of their mother's basements, and who want to, even make a meaningful contribution, make some sacrifices and make a meaningful contribution to responsibly contribute to society and to the world. And they too are looking, you know, to expand their intellectual horizons a little bit and to become part of a group of people that share their enthusiasm and their newfound initiative. So
okay, and, you know, I think too, one of the videos that we want to do is we want to model. You've been holding these meetings online for a while. I've last month I kind of did a tour and met with all of these groups, and we're talking about maybe holding kind of a model meeting online just to show kind of how it rolls out. And I think listening to your description, some people might be imagine that this is very Bible oriented, and it really isn't. That hasn't been true of my local meetup, and that wasn't really my impression of the groups that you talked about. Now, some of the people are active in church, not all of them are, but it's as we get into the protocol itself, I think people will begin to realize that it's quite what the meetings are quite contextual. They can get personal. And they're this isn't like a church Bible study where we're going to have all these 10 hard questions of the Bible or something like that. So just wanted to make sure that was clear.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, now John and I were talking about this document a little bit here, and part of what he pitched at, and we talked about this, whether this exactly meets who's on my channel and who watches a lot of my videos. And we talked about, it might be that different groups do some shorter introductory videos for their specific meetings. And you know, churches do these kind of things sometimes, just because if someone's coming new to a meeting, they often sort of want an idea of what they're getting themselves into. And, you know, sitting with total strangers, some people don't have a problem with that. Other people have a great amount of anxiety about that. So what, now you have a question here. What will they find in an average estuary meeting? What do you think of that, John?
Well, that's actually the heading for the whole rest of the thing, the rest of the document, poorly formatted to indicate what the document is supposed to do, I tried to describe what I do and what we have been doing in an average estuary meeting, and So I don't know if you want me to get into that.
Yeah, right, go ahead.
Now. Yeah, well, I mean, we have a room where it's possible to put some chairs in a circle. I kind of like to put chairs in a circle because that way I can be one of the group and I don't have to, you know, have this set apart kind of leader position in the circle and create a sense of equality among all the participants. And then it's really pretty simple, small group stuff. You know, you introduce yourself, you include your name and where you're from. And I personally like to know that because that way I know how far you drove to get here. And it gives me a sense of your level of commitment and how often we can reasonably expect to see you. But and then also the next question included in that would be, please tell the group how you ended up here. In other words, what is the route, often very circuitous, you know, that brought you to this space right here in this group where you're sitting right now? And for quite a few people in the past, for my Jordan Peterson meetups, that was, well, I learned about Jordan Peterson here or there, or I saw it on TV or I saw a YouTube video, and then I went to the book signing and I bought the 12 Rules for Life, and then I am a member of the meetup.com community, and then I saw that your group exists, and so here I am. So, but for other people, it might be, you know, I became familiar with Paul Vanaclay, with his channel, and I've kind of been hanging around all those people and looking at his videos and learning about Jonathan Peugeot and John Fravecki. And so there are different routes by way which people end up in this chair right now. And then after that's been pretty well established, then we proceed to a ritual that we do pretty much every time, whether they are first timers or not. I invite everybody who is there, although anyone may pass, again, to go around the circle and share with the group. And I say, well, since the last time we were together, and of course that gives first timers plenty of room, what have you thought about in one or several of the following four areas? And these four areas are very intentionally chosen. So it may seem obvious that people think about things intellectually. In other words, what books or articles have you read, YouTube videos you may have watched, lectures you've heard, conversations you've participated in, and what stood out for you, what got your attention, what triggered you, what impressed you, what fit very well with your prior interests. And so tell us a little bit about what you've been reading and what kind of intellectual input you've received. But then that, in my mind, that is not the only thing that I'm interested in. I will also invite people to share what's going on, you know, what might have come across their attention contextually. In other words, what happened where you live? Was there a flood, an earthquake, fires? Was there an election? Was there judicial verdicts, acts of specific kindness that were on the news that you heard about? And so what is happening in your immediate surroundings that was noteworthy and that got your attention? So you may have been thinking about that. But even that's not all. Then there's also, okay, so, you know, you are a person. You are a person with very personal exposures and engagement. And so what happened to you personally? Was there a baby born? Did you get divorced? Was there a death in the family? Did you get fired? Did you get change jobs or whatever, you know? And so those are things that are more of a personal nature. And I don't force people to reveal anything that they don't want to share. I just want them to have the option that if at this particular moment, you know, you guys may all be talking about this latest book by some desert father that we are all going to talk about with great enthusiasm, but I'm bleeding because, you know, my mom just died. And I want people to have the opportunity to say that at that moment, because I want to create an atmosphere where people also care about each other personally. And then fourthly, I want people to have a sense of self-awareness about the group that they are part of. So what have you been thinking about estuarially? I made up that word. It's a stupid word. It doesn't make any sense. But I put that in there because I want people to take some ownership of what happens in the group. You know, what have you been thinking about when it comes to the way this group works? What does it mean in your life? What do you like? What don't you like? What would you like to see different? So I want to, now this is perhaps more relevant to my leader group that I've been doing this with. So because they actually have a little bit more responsibility for the group, for the groups that they're going to implement in their specific location. So I do want them to take some, to be aware of the machinery of the group and the machinations of the group and the dynamics of the group. But I think that anyone and everyone, you know, it would be good to at least alert them to the fact, hey, we're together here. We are together in the estuary. What does that mean? What do I think about when I think about that? So I want to give them the opportunity to think about that also. So now we have a bunch of ideas on the table. I don't know if you want to react to any of these four initially or...
Well, I think it's I think it's helpful before we go into the next phase. And I noticed, you know, when I visited your groups, you have sort of a nice phase pacing in this. You know, first is introductions, and the next there's sort of the 4 points, and then you'll talk about the next thing next. But you know, I just want to I like what you did with these four, because as I watched the Jordan Peterson meetup evolve, you know, first what sort of drove people there was they had found Jordan Peterson. They didn't have anybody to talk to about this kind of thing. Bigger questions emerged. They wanted a degree of community, some commonality, someone else who was excited about what they're excited about. But eventually, you know, that impetus loses momentum. And then what you begin to settle in with is more of the community, more friendship. And that's, you know, that, so that checking in with each other is really important. And I like how you sort of differentiated these aspects. And the fourth point, the estuarially, I think is helpful because it does help then give the group a little bit of a mission and a little bit of identity. That just say, okay, this is what we're here for. We are here to be a community. We are here to care for one another. We are here to think together, and we are here to be together at different levels that we, you know, of our being. So I really like how you pulled that together, and I like the things you put in, and it's, whereas these groups are, you know, some groups more than others might tend to be a little bit more intellectual. Some groups might tend to be more personal. Things will differentiate over time. And we were talking about that. Groups will begin to take on their own flavor, their own identity, probably unique characteristics of different groups. And all of that is absolutely fine. There might be a case in which maybe you've actually got within one group, two groups really forming. At some point, maybe they need to kind of split off so that they can continue to develop in their own sort of unique quality, but all of this can go. So now you sort of put all of these things on the table, and then what do you do next, John?
Well, then comes the realization that we can't talk about everything. So then I say, okay, well, let's go around one more time. And having heard all the different thoughts and topics that have been put on the table, now share with the group which one of those you would most like to pursue further, which did you find most interesting, which would you like most to learn more about or say more about, or maybe have a question about it. And this is where I often remind people of the importance of listening well to what other people have put on the table, so that you can more knowledgeably upvote the topic that you want to engage with. I mean, it's tempting perhaps to say, well, I'm just going to vote for my own thing because that's what I want to talk about. But, you know, really listen carefully. And I actually say that before this, I actually make it a general principle that people always do well to listen well to what is going on, because if you're going to, you know, differentiate between these different things that are on the table, you need to be able to remember what they are. You know, what did Joe say? What was his thing? And what did Mary, want to discuss? And what was important to her? Now, of those two things, which do I most resonate with? Which do I want to pursue more? But you can't make that judgment if you don't carefully listen to what each person says. And so then I encourage people to go around and say, well, I really identify with what so-and-so said, and I wanted to learn more about that. And that kind of fits in with what so-and-so said, because these two together, you know, they both seem to be kind of along the same lines. And so I think that that's, you know, very interesting. And so, and then what George over there said, you know, that, you know, in a way that kind of fits in here also. So for me, these three things, I would like to go with that. And then the next person says, well, I kind of agree with that, but I also thought that what so-and-so said, this really speaks to me, you know, like, and I would like to, this would be an important and helpful topic for me to pursue. So I force people to regurgitate, as it were, to reflect on the relative merits of what people have put on the table. Now that's tricky. That can go seriously wrong. Because in the long haul, you know, there's always going to be some people that are very articulate and they can put an interesting topic on the table and make it sound like, you know, heaven and earth depend on the answer to that question. And we should all pay attention to that. But if you are a member of that group and four times in a row, you know, you bring up a topic that interests you and nobody pays any attention, wait a minute. Does anything I think about matter to this group? You know, and I am somewhat cognizant of that, and I have been known to take a person like that aside, you know, privately, and say, you know, I kind of like what you're thinking and how it's going, but other people want to talk about other things, and there is this little democratic principle going on here, so that, you know, we decide together what we're going to talk about. I don't want you to always feel like, you know, nobody cares about what you're thinking about. Is there another way that you could say it? Is there another way you can frame it? Or else, frankly, maybe you and I will just have to, you know, privately have a little conversation about that, so that you still feel like what you are thinking about is also important. So there is a little bit of additional responsibility for the host, I think, that this whole democratic process is all good and well, but it is possible for individual people to fall through the cracks.
Yeah, and you have to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah. But I mean, I train the leaders, my leaders, to do that. I train them to be aware of that. And then one thing that was also brought to my attention by one of the guys is, hey, you know, there may not be room for this topic today, but there is no reason why it couldn't be brought up at the next meeting. And then you say, well, you know, we have some old business to take care of from back then. Could we pick up that topic and then see where that takes us? And again, you know, I mean, if somebody brings that up a number of times and four or five times in a row, nobody wants to talk about that topic, maybe it's a dead topic.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if that is important to that person, you don't really want to completely, you know, dismiss it all out of hand either. So,
yeah.
I try to make every effort to make everybody feel like their thoughts and their ideas and their contributions matter. And so there are things you can do to kind of integrate some of those things into the general conversation. But yeah, no, what it basically is this is how we decide together as a group what we're going to talk about that particular meeting.
What have you learned about group size?
Good question. I think that anytime you go beyond seven, including the leader, maybe eight, including the leader, you're pushing it.
Yeah. How about length of meeting?
I have not experimented with that. I go for the 2-hour slot, and if people have to go to the bathroom, then they'll have to do that on their own. Yeah.
2 hours is a good, we at our local meetups, 2 hours was about right. You can go longer, and sometimes, and then what we would often do at our meetups would be, I would call the meeting at 2 hours, and then I would say, okay, this is the end of the official meeting. Of course, you're welcome to hang around and have any conversations that you want to follow up on with people. And then I eventually learned then you have to have another deadline to say, at this time, I'm kicking you out, turning off the lights and locking the doors. You're free to talk in the parking lot however long you want, but this is my limit.
Tell these people what some of those late hours were, Paul.
Well, they were very, I mean, my wife, I mean, it was 1:30 in the morning and the phone rang at church. And I know who's on the other end of that line. And my wife is like, where are you? Who are these people, who these random people who showed up to talk to you because they watch your videos? Are you safe?
Well, we had a dynamic in the previous venue that I used at the clubhouse at the park where I live, and we have these two really nice, very plush clubhouses, and one of them was available to me to have the meeting at, and I signed it up for 3 hours. I signed up the meeting for 3 hours, intending always to use two of those, but after the 3 hours happened, well, you were there one time when that happened, the security guy comes by, kicks us out, shines his big old flash into the window. And so, yeah, then you move the meeting to some other location. And so, yeah, yeah, it was nice.
The tyrannical retirement community.
I know.
So you got this next section on the document here. Why bother? What's that about?
Well, this has to do with some of the difficulty of deciding democratically what we're going to talk about, because different people bring different topics to the table, and quite frankly, we cannot always arrive at conclusive answers even, you know, and I do not participate in the conversation as the answer man. I very purposely don't want to be elevated in the role of the person who can speak authoritatively on certain topics. I'd rather see people wrestle with it and perhaps refer them to books or resources. I actually have every intention for the estuary groups that are starting in our community here to regularly refer people to conversations that are happening on your channel, and they can go through the archive and they can find, you know, places where this stuff has been discussed before. And so I very much do not want to have a authority canon faithful obedient followers dichotomy. You know, I very much want to be egalitarian, and that's fine for people who are open, you know, high in openness, people who can live with loose ends, who can live with questions. But I think that it leaves some people a little bit uncomfortable, because there are always going to be people who very much feel a need to be taught by credentialed authorities, you know, who want to have an agreed upon truth. They want to, and then this democratic way of doing things just seems a little bit like pooled ignorance. You've heard that phrase before. You know, we're all sitting around, you know, sharing our ignorance with each other, and what's the point of that? And so then out of that arises the question, why bother? And I feel that question could be reframed and say, even if you are not high in openness, there may be another way to look at this process and actually see some value in why bother. And so I wrote that down as another point here. So even you do that on your channel. I mean, you don't answer every question. And on the Bridges of Meaning, they don't answer every question. And when you do your Friday morning questions and answers, even then there are some loose ends. And when somebody says, you know, my brother-in-law calls me a heretic, should I be worried? Well, we don't know what the answer to that question.
Maybe you should be worried, but maybe it's not about this.
I know.
I've got my own list of things I worry about. I know. About.
Exactly. But this whole I don't think that all the value of doing this lies in the right answers to the right questions at the right time and in some kind of a intellectual exercise, because I think that what may well be as important is is the experience of gathering. That's why I wrote this list down. The experience of being known by name and perhaps by reputation. The experience of being heard and to be taken serious. And the experience of learning a new shared language so that you actually know what each person is talking about. The experience of discovering that some or perhaps many of the questions that plague you are in fact quite commonly asked by others in the group. The experience of having other people appreciate when you put in your very personal questions, your very personal journey, your very personal narrative on the table for others to compare notes with and relate to and often feel comforted by. And so you keep showing up and you keep comparing notes with each other. And in the end, it becomes almost inevitable that some form of real community is created with real friendships and meaningful connections. And that to me is super important.
Okay. Good. No, I agree. It's answers are funny things. You know, one of the things you learn, I know therapists learn this, you learn this as a pastor very quickly. Sometimes people will sit in your office and they'll want an answer to this. And every now and then you'll have one. And so you give it to them and you discover didn't make any difference.
Wrong answer.
they're going to do what they want to do anyway. Yeah. And you know, I've had experiences before with people when, you know, they, you know, cause I'm often processing with people and I do that on my channel and I'm not, you know, people in the comment section get frustrated because here, you know, you're a minister, you're called on to give this answer. And it's often with those people that then they say, Pastor, you weren't giving answers. I want you to tell me. And so then I'll tell them. And then they'll be like, they didn't want me to tell them. They didn't. I mean, because often they're wrong. I said, no, I think you're wrong. And I think you should stop. And I think you should change your ways. And then now suddenly I'm not wishy-washy. I'm evil. And so you do that as a pastor enough times and you realize that answers aren't quite what people imagine them to be, and they don't work in our lives quite as directly as we imagine they should. And that exactly. For human beings, the answers that we usually arrive at, you know, the important answers that we arrive at often painfully, but the ones that stick usually take time. And they almost always take patient presence in the lives of those around us for these answers to sort of sink in and for us to eventually say, okay, I think that's the truth. And as much as I don't necessarily like it or I don't want to live with it, one way or another, I'm going to have to make my peace with it and deal with it. And that takes time for people.
But it's also really nice when you see that happen after they've first learned to trust the space where those answers first began to emerge. You know, so in other words, what I think is going to be important about creating Estuary is to create a space where people trust each other, where people care and respect each other, care for each other. And perhaps, I mean, let's choose what it's called, you know, love each other. You know, there is a way in which you know, we can talk about highfalutin concepts and ideas, and oftentimes they are merely a diversion from what's really going on in our lives and in our hearts. And what we really need is not so much to have those things addressed very specifically and immediately, but perhaps to first create a little bit of a relationship where we could learn to trust each other so that when somebody says something, you know, that makes sense. I could use that in my life. Yeah. And maybe I ought to think about that a little different than I normally do. So yeah. And then, the next thing, of course, is the realization that in this whole context, anything can go wrong. You know, Murphy's Law applies here. The estuary is really quite fragile. You can think about it even in the symbolic and metaphoric terms that we talk about, you know, when the currents from the rivers, you know, the tide or the churning river comes into the estuary and the crashing waves and the and the dangerous animals of the sea come in. And as my friend Luke from Australia often says, the estuary crocodiles come in. and so it is not so difficult to completely upset the apple cart.
Yeah.
You know, serious mixing of metaphors here, but to have the fragile ecosystem that just barely takes hold get completely washed out to sea, and you got to start over again. Yeah. Because the truth be told is that we are not all people who come in with love and respect. Sometimes we come in as high need people, and we feel like we need to dictate the conversation according to our own perceptions of reality. And so we're forceful, we're bullies, we are, you know, perhaps impatient or whatever. And so all these things can contribute to the thing going south. And so there's not a whole lot any leader can do about that. You know, there are some small ways in which we can, you know, learn to manage that a little bit. That's really one of the reasons why I think that the shared participation and ownership of the content that whole democratic process, I think, helps a little bit to kind of take the pressure off of people that come in and want to take over the meeting, so to speak. But it can still happen. And so, you know, when it happens, then, you know, you lick your wounds and start over, and try and be forgiving and patient with each other. I like to think that we can use the 3LNR meme as a kind of a telos for the meeting. You know, it's love, listen, learn, and love and respect one another. You know, so that if you come with that attitude, then I think that almost any meeting will go really well.
Okay. That sounds good. I know you wanted this to be fairly succinct, and we're maybe 35, 40 minutes into this. So this won't by any means be my longest video.
Well, there's any number of things that we can expand upon if we wanted to, but,
I think we can leave it here. And like I said, we're hoping to do sort of a model estuary video at some point. We might do a briefer welcome, you know, welcome to this estuary meeting. This is what you can expect. Might make that even more succinct. So one of the things that's happening, when COVID happened, I sort of, put pause on the Jordan Peterson meetup. We met outside a few times, but I haven't activated the meetup.com list yet. I'm going to re-edit that and call it an estuary group, and probably, you know, Delta and all the havoc that's raising now in terms of church. And once some of this stuff settles down, probably get our Sacramento one going again. But in your corner of the world, actually, you've now gotten, you used to use the Clubhouse, and you're going to be doing it even in the church that you go to, right?
Yeah, and I'm super proud of our congregation here, and they thought about what it means to have conversations on the edge, and of course that's been part of our church website for more than a year already, and nothing much happens when it's just in the virtual space. In fact, we don't actually even know who took advantage of, you know, how many people visited that site, and they were all directed to you. You know, go see what Paul is doing on his channel. Go to the Discord server. Go. You know, so now we are actually saying to people, hey, if you're interested in this kind of thing, you know, this is going to have to be edited out, I think. But to say for people within the church community, you know, if you're going to deconstruct with us, don't go flying hither and yon to hang out with who knows who. The church is actually committed to keeping people, even when they start to rethink and have some serious questions about the fundamental tenets of the faith. Stick around. Stick around. Stick it. be part of the outer court. Be close to the cathedral. Stick with the community here, and so they actually very visually and very very much imagined Estuary as being both within the sphere of influence of this local church, but not completely a part of it. So it's kind of a beautiful, kind of the way I thought you originally intended Estuary to be positioned. And of course, we've played with this language long enough, and there are enough people here at Crosspoint who are familiar with the language and have kind of bought into that and incorporated it into their thinking. And so when it was presented to the elders, it was presented that way. And the elders approved it. And so there you have it.
Good. Well, and you know, the first video then you and I did, and I have a John Van Donk playlist, so you can see all the videos with John Van Donk in on the channel if you want to. Recently, one guy named Phil, he was going through all the old archives of all the multiple conversations with people, and he went through the whole John Van Donk list. He'd always leave a little comment at each of the videos. But you know, John, one of the things that I, you know, really appreciate about this is, you know, for some people, Estuary is sort of a place where you can sort of look at the church from the outside, but you don't necessarily have to go in. And for other people, they're sort of heading out, and maybe this is a place to stay for a while. And you know, you who had been you were an ordained minister in the Christian Reformed Church for a number of years. And you know, you've had your bumps in the road, and so and actually, I think, you know, it speaks volumes of your church and your congregation, how, you know, at a very difficult point in your life, I mean, they put their arms around you and they loved you, and you've got your share of questions and ideas that maybe don't always align so well with everything that everyone in your church thinks of, but yet they were still your church and you were still a sheep in their fold. And so I find the I find this opportunity and this space that you're the elders of your church that has granted and afforded this, I find that to be quite inspirational, and I think something worthy of esteem. So I'm really, really excited to see, you know, you've sort of been doing this sort of on the side in the clubhouse at the, you know, at the park where you live. And now it's actually going to be right there
in the music room
at Crosspoint Church
on campus.
Yeah. And I know others who have been, you know, thinking about starting a group have had some frustration with their local churches because churches are a little bit hesitant. I mean, this isn't a Bible study. No, it's not a Bible study. And there's no authority here who's going to be, you know, delivering the dogma to people to straighten them out. No, that's not what we're doing.
No proselytizing.
No. And so, but I'm really impressed that your church opened its doors to this. And I think you are exactly the right person to do this. And I think your church thinks that too. So I think it's a good thing. So. Well, anything else you want to touch on? Because I'm not editing, because what you just said right now is the best part of the video.
Well, no, I also am very grateful. But I think that the gratitude goes a number of different directions, Paul, because you have done an amazing job of conceptualizing the space of Estuary and then modeling the behavior that is valuable in the Estuary on your channel and encouraging that in various venues, such as, for example, the Bridges of Meaning and especially your random conversations, you know, your randos. And I know all kinds of people that I've had personal contact with who were greatly blessed by just your listening ability to listen and your ability to reframe some things and your ability to not cram anything down anybody's throat. And I think that creates a trust. And I think your subscriber list testifies to that.
Thank you. That's very kind. All right. So the document, I'll have a link to it, the Google Doc down below, so you can scroll through it. John, I don't know if there's an email address you want to put on that document or not, that if, you know, John started his groups about a year ago, he's got three groups. You might have to start subbing out some of these groups. Let's say if there's a leader or two who you think really have the concept and who are willing and available to do this. We might have to continue to expand this, these sort of core leadership development groups. So, and some of the people, I think some of the people took to those groups. They want to start their own groups locally, but they're not quite ready, or they feel a little, they don't necessarily feel equipped. And so I think your groups have really given people confidence and have given them a chance to practice it, even if they haven't had much locally that they could do. And so I don't know if that,
yeah, is
that
because fair? Basically what we do with the leaders is to try and stick to the same format. You mentioned at the very beginning that I was going to push back against the estuary protocol. I want to call it the estuary experience. And so, but I mean, these leaders have had the estuary experience for almost a year now. And I think that several of them will testify that this can work in other settings as well. So, yeah.
And so if you're interested in getting in on some of that training and experience and development, talk to John. Go find the other video, but get in touch with John and he can give you a link to these groups. And right now you've got three groups, and you know, maybe you'll get another 5 or 10 or 15 people and you have to start a few more, and that wouldn't be too bad. I can say it because I'm not leading them, so.
Anyway. No, I love doing it. I love the people that are associated with it. And I've made some tremendous friends all around the world this way. So it's quite fun.
All right. Okay, John, I'm going to end the video. Don't hang up.
Okay. Land the plane.
All right.